compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Now that in itself, we could just close out right now, because that tells us exactly what abstinence is about and why we're here. This is why we're here. We're here to stay, we're here to get abstinent, stay abstinent through working the steps, and then we get to carry the message to others and help them. So that's why we're here. That's our main purpose of being in program is that. So I'll tell you a little bit about my own abstinence and how it evolved. There's, you know, when I came in, I came in for about 2.5 years, 8 years before I actually stayed. And I came in and I knew that for me, I had to put a boundary around my food. I had to put, because what I was doing was eating all the time. I was literally just eating my way through the day. And so when the first couple of meetings I went to, I heard that people eat 3 meals a day. And I did that. That I knew that that is one of the things I had to do. I had stopped eating sugar some years before. I was eating so much sugar, it was making me sick. So I had stopped eating sugar on my own, but that is also on my abstinence. So my abstinence started out. And then I'll tell you a little bit about my story a little bit later, but my abstinence started out and the same as when I came back in 2002. And I knew that's what it needed to be. 3 meals a day. I don't have snacks. So 3 meals a day and no sugar. And then when I walked back in, I identified maybe 5 or 6 foods that I knew I could not eat. I just knew I could not eat them because that's what I was eating when I was the most uncomfortable. That's what I was eating to push those feelings down. So, and guess what? They're all deep fried. So you can just pick any 6 deep fried foods. That was on my initial, I know that I can't eat those things. So that was my abstinence when I walked in and started. So I started in August of 2002. I started to come to meetings. I started back coming to meetings at that time. And I sat down back in the rooms. I always share this. When I walked back in, I was so warmly welcomed into my meetings that I immediately felt a part of. Maybe not a part of. That's probably stretching it. But I was able to breathe. Let's put it that way. I sat down and I was able to listen and I could breathe. And it felt like that's where I needed to be. I count my abstinence day is the first day. It took me about a month to pick a sponsor. And I picked a sponsor. I just went to meetings and listened. And I picked a sponsor. It wasn't who I thought it would be, by the way. I picked a sponsor that was also a 100-pounder. I had heard her speak at several meetings in that time. And so I asked her if I could call her, and she said yes. And I started calling her every morning at 6 a.m. Now, what I was supposed to do with that time, I didn't know any of this, by the way. You know, I walked in and I don't know anything. So I was supposed to tell her what I was going to eat for the day. And very quickly, she gave me some writing assignments, okay? And that what it was is the writing assignments she gave me were the first 3 steps using all AA literature. So that's what she was having me do. Now, I didn't know what that was all about, but I did start doing it. Like, I listened. I had a big book. I listened and I did what she said. So my abstinence, 3 meals a day and no sugar. That's basically what it was. Now, so that started out like, and that was okay. And it was in the beginning, I was okay. So I was 280 pounds basically when I walked back in. So I'm 280 pounds, and I'll tell you a little bit about what I was feeling to a little bit later. I was 280 pounds. So what I ate was, I ate 3 big meals a day. Right? They were big. They were big. Okay. And she'd listen to me. And I, of course, left no sugar, and I left out those 5 foods. I didn't have those in the meal plan, but anything else was basically okay. And I ate that, and I ate 3 meals a day, and that was my abstinence. And I would call her every morning, and I would do that little bit of writing, And when I called her, I would talk, we would talk about it, right? We just started by talking. It was pretty simple. I'd tell her what I was going to eat. So that's how it started. So about a month into calling her, of course, I'm getting to know her a little bit, and all of this was very strange, but I was getting to know her, and I'm doing this writing little by little. And it took me about a month to really hear what I was calling in. It took me about a month to really hear what I was saying. Okay. So I call her these three big meals a day. And I was pretty honest with them. There was a little bit give and take, but I was pretty honest and I was pretty proud of that. And it took me about a month, but I asked her to help me with a food plan. Now she's on her way down the scale, right? She maybe had 2 or 3 years of abstinence. She's on her way down the scale. I had her help me with a food plan. Didn't understand that either, although I had years and years and years of dieting, of course. But we started to create a food plan at that point, and she had me measuring certain things and I'm going to have these things. It was okay. Everything was okay. But I couldn't understand for the longest time why I was able to follow that food plan. Basically, I couldn't understand. I'd never been able to follow anything in my life. So for any length of time, if it was a couple of months, it was a day, it was 2 months, it was another day, it was like that. And so I was able to follow that, and I didn't get it in the beginning. I really didn't get it. But what the thing I was doing was I was working the steps. I was writing. And I had a little bit of writing every day. And I was that's what helped me be able to follow that food plan. Now, another thing I'm going to tell you is that when I walked in on that August of 2002, I was so demoralized. And it had, by that time, I was so past the weight. I was so past being 280 pounds. I was so demoralized inside, and I was so void of any feel. I couldn't even feel anymore. I couldn't feel. I had eaten it down for so long and eaten down that fear and eaten down those feelings that I couldn't, it's like I couldn't stand being me anymore. So when I walked in and sat down in that meeting in the first like half a dozen meetings, I just sat and I just was breathing. Like it was the best thing I could have done. So I had no hope that I was going to lose that weight. I had no hope. It wasn't even on my mind by that time. If you can picture that, I was so dead inside and demoralized. I needed to be somewhere. I needed to do something and be somewhere, but I wasn't thinking I'm going to go to OA and lose this weight. That was not on my mind. I think I said, I have to do something here. I'm going to go to OA and see if it can work for me, right? Not even knowing what to expect. And that was probably the best thing I could have done. I was open-minded. I just needed to be here. So that's kind of how I got here and what happened when that abstinence evolved. Now, so I'm writing the steps and I'm guess what happened in that? So within the first couple of months, I did start to drop weight a little bit. Like she had me weigh once a month so I'm kind of steadily, not fast, but I was steadily dropping the weight, and I'm writing and writing and writing. She also, my sponsor, was a very big person in service in our inner group. I'm from a bigger inner group, by the way. I'm from San Fernando Valley inner group. It's as big as Los Angeles, basically. And we're right next door. So we actually work together on a lot of things. So lots of meetings, lots of people. But I just lost my train of thought. It's okay. It'll come back. So how it evolved. All right. That's what I was talking about. So, as I'm losing weight little by little, and I'm actually feeling now, and I've gotten to know some people, see how that life is just kind of opening up. I'm getting to know some people. my sponsor put me into some simple service. You know, in the beginning, it was like being on a committee to something. And I met some more people. I'm watching, and we used to go, a bunch of us used to go to a meeting, then we'd go out for lunch on a Sunday and we'd talk, you know, things like that. This was not done with me anymore, you know, before. So I was getting, is opening up, getting to know people, dropping some weight, following my food plan, but now I'm starting to feel different things. So as those foods started to come up that were bothering me, they would, you know, like, how can I say this? So I was eating soberly. All right. So that's a word I use a lot. I use that word sober a lot. And I mean sober with my food. I was eating soberly, and things would start to bother me. Like I couldn't eat sandwiches really anymore. You know, I'd eat them and I'd feel anxious, and I would start to feel those things. And then that food would be something I would have to let go of, right? And it comes up little by little. It's not that I added it to my abstinence, but I knew I couldn't eat it anymore. I identified it as a red light food. Like I'm not going to be able to stay abstinent if I continue to eat this fill in the blank food, whatever it is. So one by one, I'm getting stronger. My food is cleaning up. I'm feeling better. And also I'm also feeling all these things coming up, right? So, and I'm working with a sponsor. I've had several sponsors, and I probably at this point, after my fourth step, I changed sponsors to a sponsor that was my sponsor. Actually, my first sponsor relapsed. I changed to a sponsor that scared the crap out of me, number one. And she was a big book sponsor. And she actually came up to me. I don't even, you know, God works in mysterious ways, right? So she came up to me and she took me through a whole bunch of extra things. She was a 100-pounder as well that had lost her weight a while before. So I got to get back into the big book a lot, okay? And then in that time, I'm also learning how to live. So that it becomes also a part of abstinence, all right? Is that I'm gonna, besides my food being clean, there's a whole bunch of things that go along with my abstinence. Number one is a sober food plan. And number two is meetings. I have to go to meetings. I can't stop going to meetings, obviously. I never wanted to stop, but I have to go to meetings. I have to call my sponsor when I'm supposed to. And I have to work the steps. All those things are involved with my abstinence. It describes it well. I'm going to read one thing to you right now. In the OA 12 and 12, so that's kind of how my abstinence evolved, and I'll get back into that a little bit. In the OA 12 and 12, I'll read this little section to you, which really spoke to me. It says, the definition of abstinence has been refined over the years as the OA Fellowship has clarified the meaning of abstinence for all of our members. It is important to remember that abstinence is not the exact content of our plan of eating, which we are each responsible to determine and follow as we surrender to our higher power's guidance. Nor is abstinence about what we weigh, although attaining and maintaining a healthy body weight is a result of our abstinence. Abstinence is refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors that create the obsessive thinking about and destructive acting out with food. That's kind of what I was just talking about. These foods come up and I realize that it's a red light food for me, meaning if I eat that food, I don't feel right. I don't feel right at all. That's something that's gotta go. And it says here, a plan of eating helps us each day to get and remain abstinent. Super important. Food plans may change over time as our circumstances change or as we discover newer different foods or behaviors from which we must abstain. Completely true there. That's completely true. My food plan changed a lot and it had to do with amounts and quantities and losing. When I started losing, again, I didn't know I was going to lose weight. I had no hope for that, but I was steadily losing. And then when I got down to somewhere around a healthy body weight, my sponsor and I, we were hysterically, like she was at a healthy body weight, but we didn't know about me. I had never been below probably 200 pounds in my life, okay? So I came in at 46, I had always been somewhere between 240 and 280 pounds. I didn't know any different. By the way, neither did my body. It went a little nuts, losing that much weight, right? All kinds of things happened. Some are really funny, actually, but all kinds of things happened, including, like, I had to keep getting my thyroid checked. I had to really take good care of myself during that time. It was something I never experienced. And when I got down to healthy body weight, I went below that, okay? And I had never had the experience that I had to stop losing weight and even up, okay? I didn't ever have that experience. So that was something I had to work on. By the time that happened, I was completely committed to the program and to working the steps. And I knew people, I reached out for help, and I was able to do that with my sponsor's help, especially, so I can obtain and maintain a healthy body weight. Like, I can't be below. That doesn't work either. I'm going to tell you something. That did not feel good. And so when I came back up to a healthy body weight, that was perfect. So all that said, I'm all in this time. I'm also doing life. Okay. All this is happening, but I'm also doing life, and I have to stay sober in my life as well. Abstinence includes, how can I say this? Well, our disease, there's three things with our disease. There's physical, emotional, and spiritual. Okay. So the physical is my body and is what I do. And it's my food plan. And it is that I did get to a healthy body weight. That's all fantastic. But how did I do that? Right. Number one, I had to stay abstinent to do that. It describes in the big book, and this is probably a good time to read it. That's a good time to read it. Okay, so because I jump around a little bit, sorry. So, in the doctor's opinion, here's just a little paragraph from the doctor's opinion. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. That means for me, that is super important, by the way. My disease and the disease that's described as compulsive overeating and alcoholism, all the addictions, okay? I can't pick up things that I'm allergic to because it starts that phenomenon of craving, all right? And then my allergies triggered and I can't stop eating. Now, for me, it can be anything. I have an addiction to feeling full. I discovered that later, that if I get too full at a meal, and at the time I discovered it, it's because I was clean. I was clean and sober. By the time I discovered that, I eat a meal that I'm eating. I eat too many vegetables, let's say, and I'm uncomfortably full. You know what I mean? The things I measure were fine, but it was like the vegetables. And I ate a lot of those and I was uncomfortably full. I thought, oh, geez, that was too much. I got to be careful of that. Talk to my sponsor. Okay, we're good. But guess what happened the next day? I eat dinner and I want to be that full again. I like that feeling of being that full. And I thought, oh my, right? That's just another part of the addiction that I'm going to want to do that again. It's like picking up sugar. I can't touch those foods that are going to take me out of my abstinence. So that's how important it is. That's very, very clearly defined. Abstinence is black and white, okay? Our food plans can change as we need them to. And like I say, things come and go. Most of the time they go and they don't come back, but they come and go. And when the honesty in that is that if I discover something that's bothering me, I need to, number one, speak up to my sponsor. Number two, let that food go. It's not worth it, right? There's plenty of other things that I'm good eating. So that was, I read page 20. Okay, so I want to read you something, and it has to do with, this is the day This is on Voices of Recovery. This is the day I got abstinent, September 28th. And this describes abstinence, the big picture of it, like I'm trying to describe to you in really good terms, really easy to understand. So this is September 28th. Abstinence is the beginning. I could not work the steps and grow spiritually without being abstinent. So number one, I had to put the food down, okay? Putting the excess food down cleared my mind, my body and my mind so that I could be open to examine the defects of character in me that blocked me from my higher power. Freedom from my substance opens my mind and my heart to the changes that are necessary for me to become all that my higher power created me to be. When I remain in the food, the channel to my higher power is closed. Remaining abstinent is a priority I must have in my life if I'm going to grow and change through the 12 steps. Remember, that's why we're here, to work the steps and to carry the message. I can't do that if I'm eating, okay? And I got written here on my page, remember this is my birthday, okay? On my page, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence from the doctor's opinion. So that's talking about the big picture of abstinence, right? Like if I'm gonna work, I have to be working the steps. I have to abstain with the food. I have to be sober with my food. I at that point, I can actually work the steps. They will work with me, and I can then progress, let my character defects go. All this time, my life is getting better. Isn't that why we're here? To have a better life? That's why I'm here. I didn't know that was possible. I just needed to be somewhere. But guess what? That's possible here. Everything will get better. The situations may not, but I will be able to deal with anything that comes up in life if I stay abstinent with the help of the program, okay? My sponsor, my group, I can stay abstinent and I can work through whatever comes up. I want to read to you, so you talked about that. So I want to tell you a couple of stories that always come in my head about abstinence. You know, what happened in the valley, we just call it the valley, okay, because we're really cool. What happened in the valley about 6 years ago, I was going to a big meeting on Sunday morning, one of the biggest meetings, and I would go, and we had a great time. It was always a good speaker. It was a very strong meeting. So what happened was, I believe that this woman called me and talked to me before she shared this at the meeting. But she got up and she shared, and it was a long timer, okay? It was someone that we all knew, it was a long timer. She got up and she said, you know what? I got to tell you, I have been, she said, it's not that I'm eating my non-abstinent foods. It's not that. She said, my meals have gotten bigger. I'm getting bigger. She says, it may not show now, but I've gained, I don't know, whatever it was, 20, 25 pounds. She said, I've been lying to my sponsor. I haven't told her everything I'm eating. And she said, you know, I haven't picked up whatever her abstinent food is. Let's say it's sugar, because that's a lot of people's. I haven't picked up sugar, but I don't feel right. I don't feel abstinent. So I'm going to tell you guys, and we're talking about, there's 100 people in that room. I'm going to tell you that I need to start my abstinence over. I talked to my sponsor yesterday about it. And she said, I feel so much better doing that and telling you, I feel like I have a chance here. And I thought that was the most courageous thing that someone would do. And what happened with that was that she started a string of people doing that, right? So they listened to her, and now she's getting better. And people are thinking about, yeah, I've been pushing that edge quite a bit. And it happened that 6 or 7 people actually started their abstinence over because they weren't being honest, okay? They were gaining weight. They were doing this and that or whatever. And they realized, no, this isn't right. That's why it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right because it's not abstinent behavior, right? So it was really, I really appreciated that everybody did that. And one helped the next one. The next one helped the next one. And they all felt better. So that was really good. abstinence is not about white knuckling, sitting on the fence, not eating sugar, but eating everything else uncontrollably. That's not what it is. In the big picture, that may be what it is in the beginning, okay? Like the new person coming in, they're gonna not, it's not gonna be real smooth, and it wasn't real smooth for me either. But down the road, I think that it grows like, it grows and it's a protection for us that we are eating soberly, we're doing what we're supposed to do, we're sharing, carrying the message, and we're working the steps. That's an abstinent life, I think. So that was one story that always comes to mind. I always feel good about sharing that. I had a, this is kind of, it wasn't funny at the time, okay, but I'm going to tell you guys, this is a funny story. I had a sponsee at one time, and this was years and years ago, and she was angry. Oh my gosh, this woman was angry all the time. She was okay talking to me most of the time, but she was usually angry at somebody else, right? So she called me one time, and I almost remember where I was because it was the funniest thing I've ever heard. I was baffled and blown away. And she said to me, she said, well, I went into Whole Foods. You need to know Whole Foods, it's really expensive. So that's part of the fun, the funny part of it. I went into Whole Foods. I ordered $70 worth of food from the deli case. $70 worth of food from the deli case. She said, I paid for it with a bad check and I ate it all. Paid for it with a bad check, by the way. And she ate it all. And then she said, but you know what? None of it has sugar, so I'm still abstinent. I'm like, are you kidding me? Really? You think that's okay? You know, people want to push that, oh my God, like, that's not the road I'm on. And that's not the road I want to be on. And I can't, like, I can't co-sign with that. I cannot co-sign that. But that, you know, that's just a couple of the stories of things that I firsthand. And a couple of them, the other ones I have are really kind of sad. I've had a couple of, one a sponsee and one a very, very good friend of mine that came into the program as overeaters. And they completely went the other way. I had one very close to getting hospitalized for anorexia. Okay, because this happens sometimes. And she was lying to her sponsor. She was her sponsor was actually in Europe and for a job. And so she was lying to her sponsor. She was lying to her sponsor about her weight every week. So she wasn't reporting her weight and she wasn't eating what she was saying, and she's dropping weight. So we're seeing her, the people, you know, in the meetings were like, and somebody just like plucked her up and say, hey, what's going on here? She was down to 89 pounds. And that, you know, that's the other part of the disease. It's not the other part, it's a part of our disease. And that's the part of the big picture of abstinence. We have to be honest. We have to stay at a healthy body weight, basically stay at a healthy body weight or be working toward that. And of course we know honesty is the basis of the program. That's in chapter 5, how it works. Have to be honest, and we have to, you know, have the intention to be abstinent every day. So those are just some things that I've heard, firsthand things that I've heard that really made me think about abstinence and be so grateful that I feel abstinent today. And in the, you know, every morning is a new day and I feel abstinent. Let me read to you. Now, this is the definition of abstinence from World Service, which is really important. I mean, they really worked on this. It says, abstinence, the act of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. And then recovery, removal of the need to engage in compulsive eating behaviors. Spiritual, emotional, and physical recovery is achieved through working and living the Overeaters Anonymous 12-step program. I mean, that's beautiful right there. So our purpose is to abstain. Get to a healthy body weight, some slower, some faster. get to a healthy body weight and carry that message of the steps to the next person. That's what that's about. I read you the doctor's opinion. I want to tell you, how am I doing on time, Linda?
You still have, it's 7:05.
So. Okay. Okay. That sounds good. All right. Let me see what would be next. Well, I want to just progress a little bit along of my story too. So as I said, as I was losing the weight and getting, and I worked with this one sponsor on the Big Book a lot. I changed sponsors a couple times. You know, the gift of the program is that I've had several sponsors. Now the sponsor I have now, I've had for almost 10 years. She's not a 100-pounder. And I actually asked her because I was in a different kind of, you know, I went through a couple of different things. That working the program, and especially, like I say, we have big meetings and there's a lot of people, and that part doesn't matter. It's the strength of the group. You know, we have someone in our inner group that always says, you know, if I'm abstinent today, our group is stronger. Meaning if she's abstinent, then we're all abstinent and our group is stronger. And we get to talk to each other and walk through life with each other. That's the most important thing. That we have support, we don't do anything alone anymore. And I can only do that if I'm clear-headed, right? So what happened was, there was a couple of things that happened in my life, but after that, I went through a big breakup. I worked with my sponsor. Actually, there was a couple things that happened in there, but in abstinence, I went through a big breakup. And all that went along with that, there was the selling the house, and, you know, I had to move twice, actually. I couldn't find a house to buy. All the time I'm working, but the women in the program really carried me through that. They lifted me up and walked me through that. But when I settled down into where I am today, it was probably, that's a process of, I bet you the process was a solid year, if not more, all that moving and shifting and everything. And, you know, when I settled down, I actually added a meeting. I felt like I had to add a meeting, and that felt really good to me. Whatever I need to do to maintain my abstinence and my peace of mind, now I'm talking about peace of mind and emotional recovery, that's what I have to do, and that's what I had to do. I couldn't be in my relationship any longer. It was not conducive to peace, and it wasn't authentic. So that's what I had to do, and I worked the steps through to be able to make that decision. It was a decision made over a period of time, and I'm so grateful for the program that I could walk through that abstinently, meaning I didn't have a lot of amends to make either. I just walked through it, and I tried to stay peaceful and kind and loving. And I can only do that if I'm working the steps. And then I wanted to tell you a little bit about some gifts of the abstinence that were happening today with me. So my life is pretty calm, but what I've been working on lately is I've had a big change at work, right? So I worked for a family for about 18 years. I my boss was the father, and there was three children. Now they weren't involved in much, but it was a family business. The family owns a bunch of property, and I was working for them. So the father got sick and the son took over, right? Now the relationship I had with the son was never good. It was not good. He would show up and my hair would just stand right on end, right? It just, oh my God. And so now he's taken over the business, all right? And I started to get more and more and more anxious, and we're not getting along, right? And I'm trying to be helpful. We're not, and I'm sad about his dad, right? On top of it, we're all sad about his dad getting sick. So it was a kind of a, God, it was so close of a emotion. There were so many emotions going on there. But I have been working on this for probably a year and a half with my sponsor because it kept on coming up, right? So it would come up, we'd work on some stuff. I would get a little bit more peace. I just increased everything because I knew what would happen is I knew that the program would help me with this. I have that faith now because it's helped me through everything in my life by being abstinent and sober and working the steps. That has helped me through everything that I've done since I've come into program. So I'm working on my work stuff, anxious. Oh my gosh, am I anxious, right? I mean, my default is fear and anxiety. I'm afraid of people. Now, you'd never know that today, but when I came in, that was the biggest thing. I lived my life afraid of people. And I would have to eat when I was out in the field at work. I would have to eat before I went to that next stop and knocked on that next door and talked to that next apartment manager. I would have to eat. So I'd have to stop. That's why I was eating all the time. I'd have to stop and eat something before I could go to my next thing and do the next thing. I just was so full of fear. And in working the program, that has 90% gone away. Okay. Now I'm just like, I think everybody has a little fear. Am I right? Does everybody have a little bit of fear on stuff? I think that's kind of normal. But the extra fear, that paralyzing fear has gone away. And I can stand up and I can do what I need to do. But now this new boss is coming along and then anxiety came up again, right? Our character defects, you know, they don't go away really. They get better. They don't leave. I think it just, that pendulum swings more toward the center on things, but I don't think they go anywhere. I think I've always had that. It's going to stay, but it doesn't pop up very often. Now it's popping up. So I've been working with my sponsor a lot. I did the steps again on this. I've done several different exercises on this and literature and everything, but I don't know what that would be like without the solutions I found in the program. I don't know what that would be like. I think I'd be right back to square one without the solutions I have today, right? And the working of the program, it just wouldn't be the same. So let's see, there's probably a lot more to say. I'm gonna read a couple more things, especially the last paragraph in page 558 of the big book. I think it's beautiful, number one. And it tells us what happens and how we stay sober. It tells us the gifts that we get. And that's what I want to hear from you too, what the gifts that you've gotten from abstinence. Let's see. All right, so let's see. Okay, so above all, this is 559. Nope, I'm gonna read 558, yep, okay. All these things and many more AA gave me, but above all, it taught me how to handle sobriety. I've learned how to relate to people. Before AA, I could never do that comfortably without alcohol. I have learned to deal with disappointments and problems that once would have sent me right to the bottle. I've come to realize the name of the game is not so much to stop drinking as to stay sober. Alcoholics can stop drinking in many places and many ways, but Alcoholics Anonymous offers us a way to stay sober. That's it right there. We have a solution for life that so we don't have to eat over what's happening. Now I'm going to tell you something. I take sponsee calls in the morning. I take 4 sponsee calls early in the morning, 4 days a week. 2 of my sponsees lost their abstinence yesterday over what was happening. Oh, okay. I'm glad they told me, but you know what? That's not dealing with life on life's terms. One of them's not that new. Okay. That's what we learn here. What we learn in the program, and I'll tell you what I do each day just to reinforce all that is that whatever happens, I don't have to pick up food. I don't have to pick up food, my alcoholic foods, or my behaviors. Wandering through the grocery store, I don't need to do that today. That's whatever happens, I stay sober, right? Emotional sobriety is how I do that. I stay emotionally sober with what's happening around me. So that's really important. So it's just about the 45-minute mark, and I want to hear questions from all of you. You can ask me anything. You can share. I'll probably have VF ask questions at what it does. It reminds me of things I want to tell you because I'm old, so that's, I forget. But I hope that all made sense. And so please let me know if you have any questions. And we'll go from there. We got plenty of time.
Thank you, Holly. If you would like to share, go ahead and raise your hand in the participant section.
I'm Michelle, compulsive eater. Thank you for sharing.
Michelle.
Thank you for sharing, Holly. I was glad to hear your story, and I know exactly what the program has done for me. First of all, I lost 90 pounds 30 years ago, and I've never seen it again. That's not the most important thing, but I'm 73 now, and I'm glad I'm not carrying that weight. I always think about the promises. My favorite one is that my whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed. Completely. I'm completely transformed. I have a new freedom and a new happiness. I've gained interest in my fellow sufferers. My fear of economic insecurity has lessened. It's not gone, but it's lessened. And I know intuitively how to handle situations that used to baffle me, particularly in relationships. I feel like I just joined Al-Anon about 2 years ago, and I'm finding out a lot more about relationships. But I'm very grateful for OA. I'm very grateful that at my age, my mother died of obesity-related diseases. And I know that she was an invalid because of her weight for the last 7 years of her life. And I often think that would be me if it wasn't for the fact that I was... And my abstinence is also 3 meals a day, nothing in between, no sugar, and has been for all those years. So I'm grateful to be here and to hear abstinence and recovery, and I'll pass.
Thank you for sharing, Michelle. Deb B., you're up.
Hi, I'm Deb. I'm a compulsive eater. Thank you, Holly, for your share. It was very inspirational. I've been in OA for 12 and a half years, and I've had off and on abstinence. But the one thing that I've done right is I never quit coming because I know what's outside the rooms for me. Misery, more misery. I've been abstinent now since March 2nd, and I feel really good in so many ways. I think part of the problem before was I didn't really want to give up the foods I was addicted to. I was always trying to figure out a way that I could have a little, that I could, have it on special occasions only. I was always, doing a lot of bargaining with the food. And for some reason, I don't know, and I'm very grateful that it happened, that I just got to the point of surrender, that I was tired of fooling around. I was tired of failing. And everything was changing so much in March, and all of these virtual meetings were available. And it's been just an incredible growth experience for me to hear people speak from all over the world, actually. I feel so much more peaceful. Like I'm not really struggling against the food now. I can be around my binge foods and not crave them and desire them and try to think of how I could maybe get away with eating them. It's very peaceful feeling, and I'm really grateful. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Deb. Karen Kay, you're up.
Hi, Holly. Thank you. It was, as Deb said, so very inspirational for me. And I heard your struggles. And you know, I, of course, I'm self-centered. I thought I was the only one struggling. And what you said about eating soberly, I mean, it just went click. I'm sober in another program. Hey, it took me a couple years, but no problem. This program, and then I switch my addictions. And it just reminded me, you know, to eat soberly. I mean, just give up, and mine is sugar, give up that stuff. I don't need it. And you had talked about the gifts I've received. You know, the gifts I have received so far is people here, friends here in OA that have supported me and been there for me, my down times and my up times. And you also talked about, you know, recovery is physical, emotional, and spiritual. Physical, my body. Okay, I've been working on the body, you know, trying not to eat, but, and emotionally working on it, I, you know, go to counseling because I have a lot of trauma and I'm going to EMDR, but spiritual. And that is what I was lacking. And I have most wonderful sponsor that is so spiritual. It's allowing me, she allows me to talk spiritually and what's inside of me that I have not shared, you know, little here, little there, but now that spirituality is coming through. So, you know, looking at that list, physical, emotional, and spiritual, I'm going, hey, those are checkoffs. You know, for me. And I thank you for really talking about abstinence and the freedom from the substance. So thank you very much. And the valley, I was from Southern California. I was from Long Beach. Talk to you later. My other question was, were you a valley girl?
Thank you, Karen. Lisa.
Hi, Holly. I was wondering if you could share a little bit more. It was really great hearing your story. I was wondering if you could share a bit more on the idea of sober eating. So I get, of course, you know, there's trigger foods and, you know, and of course to, you know, like, because working towards a healthy body weight, it's important to eat appropriately. That's going to get towards that, you know, that is going to lead in the right direction. But there's this part of me, you know, that keeps wanting to do like, a free for all on certain foods, you know, whether it's or not. Not they're not trigger foods, but it's like whether it be like you were saying about having bigger meals or, you know, sometimes it's really hard to have a smaller meal or not have certain foods with a meal, and that could, or not as in not, I don't know, I mean, having bigger portions of carbs or certain things like that, or other foods. So this idea of sober eating, I find it really hard to really surrender to that, you know. So there's aspects of the program and recovery and my food plan that I'm able to surrender to. It's just then the other part about being able to find a way to really, you know, want to eat soberly rather than just feeling like I have to. So I don't know if that makes sense or not. Thank you.
Thanks. Yes, it makes absolute sense, and it's an excellent question. Thank you, Lisa. So the reason, what creating a, let's back up a minute, creating a food plan. Okay. So in the beginning, abstinence usually means something about the food, right? It's going to be like, you're going to not eat sugar. Like for me, as I said, 3 meals a day, because I was eating all the time. I was literally eating through the day. And no sugar, because I knew that was one of my substances. And these other things that I mentioned, these other deep fried things, that's what I would go for in these in-between meal things. That's what I would, you know, I'd stop and get deep fried things or chips or stuff. So knowing that I had to let those things go, that was my initial abstinence. You know, what my sponsor says today is that, you know, and I created that, I committed to that abstinence, and that's worked all the way through. But she says, she had said something interesting. She said, when she was describing abstinence to a newcomer and how you do that, she said that abstinence, it has to be something that you need God for, which really hit me. It's not just, like, if I want to get better, there's got to be major changes. I have to, and I have changed immensely in every way, okay? Physical, emotional, spiritual, I've changed completely. I'm a much different person than when I first came in, and how I lived my life. I'm just really, really different. I actually can talk now. You know, this wouldn't have happened. I didn't talk to anybody. There was days I didn't talk. If I wasn't at work, I wasn't talking. It was really, I was very, very shy, and I'm not shy anymore. But these things came about because I started and I'm working the steps. So the sober part is that I'm not going to put those foods in my body or do those behaviors that make me feel out of control again, like I was, right? Like I can't stop eating. I had a situation with, I drink a lot of coffee. Let's go back to the beginning, okay? Maybe the first 2 years. I drink coffee, okay? And I was drinking coffee with half, regular half and half, not the sweetened kind, but coffee half and half and Splenda. And I would drink a lot of it. And then what I was doing was, I was on the way to work, I'd pick up a couple of bottles of Diet Coke, or no, Coke Zero. Let's not lie. Sometimes I lie. I'll call myself out. It wasn't Diet Coke. It was Coke Zero, right? So I would pick up a couple bottles, and then by about 11 a.m., I would slug down 2 bottles of Diet Coke. Now, this is just in the beginning of abstinence, right? And then I'd eat lunch. I'd be okay. And then I'd go home and eat dinner. So that was my 3 meals. But I was down with a Diet Coke, at least 2 bottles at a time. After a little bit, that did not work anymore. That's another substance. So I realized, oh my God, I text my sponsor at 11 a.m. after these 2 bottles, and I'm like, I can't have any more caffeine today. It was okay in the beginning, not okay when once I started to feel it, had to let that go. That's taking me away from God. So those foods and those behaviors that take me away from God have to go, and they feel funny. That's your tell. Okay. I didn't feel right when I was doing those things. It was okay in the beginning. Wasn't okay after a little while. In the beginning, I could do 3 meals and no sugar. That's all I could do. But when you get into the program and you're working the steps, and by the way, the spiritual part of it is, I found a personal God. I was good with God. That wasn't an issue. But I found a much more personal God by working through the steps and getting rid of those things that were keeping me away from God, right? So, and I can only do that without overeating. And that's how it goes. Put down the food, I work the steps, I develop a much stronger relationship with a personal God. Then God is my director and I can trust God. That's the first three steps, turn things over. So I know that's a big long answer to that question, but it's all part of sobriety, okay? I'll tell you sometime the story about the coffee. I drink a lot of coffee, but guess what happened? That half and half had to go. And this was at a time when I was low in weight and I was drinking a lot of coffee, a lot of half and half, right? I found myself, and I told somebody this morning, it's funny that you said that. I found myself, I had stopped in 7-Eleven to get a coffee. I found myself, I'm standing in front of that big rack of creamers, you know, that they have there on that counter. And I wanted to drink. I wanted to just start tearing open those creamers and drinking them, right? And I thought, oh no, that's how it goes. Then the creamer's got to go. So I let go of the creamer and I thought, I'm never going to make it. Like, I'm so dramatic, right? I'm not going to make it letting go of this creamer. I love creamer in the coffee and put the Splenda in too, right? And I let go of that creamer. You know how long it took me to get over that? About a day and a half. Black coffee with the Splenda is still there, but black coffee from then on. And I never touched it again, but it made me that uncomfortable. So that's how you identify those foods that got to go. Is that I just was like, ah. So I know, too long of an answer, but thank you for the question.
Would anyone else like to share or ask a question? Donna, go ahead.
Thank you. I had to figure out how to do that thing, raise the hand. I'm Donna, compulsive eater. Thank you, Holly, very much. I'm really benefiting from listening to you. The thing that has really, really strikes me, how I've benefited from program is I came in so angry and so depressed. One of the reasons I came in was because I knew I would not have a relationship with my daughter. I knew that I wasn't the kind of person she would want to be around. I didn't like myself, so I knew she couldn't like me either. And that was before she had a child. So it's just been a gift to be able to get abstinent, work those steps, let go of that anger, let go of the resentments, have the depression lifted. And as a result, my relationships are so much better. I feel so grateful to have a 43-year-old daughter who calls me and includes me in her life. That wouldn't have happened without abstinence. I know that. So I'm very grateful to be abstinent, very grateful for all of you who have put this retreat on. Thank you so much. And thank you, Holly, for showing up and sharing. You had started to say a while ago, I think you said you lost your train of thought, and you started to say, I do these things to stay abstinent. If we don't run out of time, I'd like to hear what some of those things are. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Sure. And I did. I completely lost my train of thought, but I was going to tell you what I do every day. It just isn't in my regular days because I think that's it. And it's all a result of it. It helps me stay abstinent and it's a result of abstinence. So I get up really early in the morning. I mean, really early. And I do have some coffee, of course. You knew that, right? I'm going to down some coffee. But I have, I do three meditation books. I am in two programs, by the way. I do three meditation books. And then I do a Dear God letter. And that's kind of like a prayer. Dear God, thank you for this day. That's how it starts. Dear God, thank you for this day. Either help me with this or please be my director. It's always please be my director. Show me what to do next. It's very, very simple language. That have actually expanded on this thing with, that I'm going through with work. It's like, just show me what to do next. I'll show up, get dressed. So I do the writing. I do whatever step work I'm working on with my for my sponsor. And then I try to leave myself 10 minutes to do prayer and meditation. Then I get ready for work, okay? And then I get completely ready. And then I start my sponsee calls at 6 a.m. and they go every 10 minutes. And the women do the same thing with me, basically. They're going to read their writing, whatever. I have, I do four of those, four sponsees at that time. And then I try to do some exercise then, or I just get ready for work and go. We didn't even talk about exercise. Oh my God, that's a huge part of the physical well-being. But I either do some exercise or I get ready and I go to work. And then I go to four meetings a week. If of course now I can go to any place, but my regulars are four meetings and I still go to those same four regular meetings. And then, pop into other ones if I need to, because I got a bit depressed in this pandemic too. I live by myself and I'm used to going to meetings and being with people. We go out for coffee, hugging people. Of course, that all stopped, right? I kept going to work, but being at home all that time was a little triggering for me. So, and then at night, so I go to meeting, and then at night I do a 10-step. I have a form that I kind of fill out that I've personalized. It's right out of the big book. It's page 86. But I've added a ton of things to it. Like I write gratitude lists. I write the tools that I work for that day, my action plan, and what I did right that day. And that question that my sponsor made me put in that damn 10-step, how did you practice? Were you humble today? Boy, is that hard, right? And I have to put an example. I can't just say yes. So I have to put an example about that. I have to really, that's the one I have to think about. And then I put my food on a document and I send her my food for the next day. So she's got my food for the next day then. And I call her twice a week to do my reading and writing, and we talk about a lot of things. And then if I need to call her at a different time, I do. But we have two formal calls, scheduled calls. I do, like I say, I exercise 3 to 4 times a week. Nothing strenuous, but a couple cardios and a couple of muscle things, strength. This keeps my body healthy because I'm full of arthritis. So that keeps my healthy body, and I'm always grateful for that. That's always on my gratitude list, that I can move and that I have a healthy body. So that's what I do each day. I hope that answered your question. Anybody else have a question? Sure.
Can I start, Becky? Is that so? My question is...
Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Thank you. As far as your food plan goes,
mm-hmm.
when you first started, did you weigh, measure, count calories, or do you still do that today? And another thing is, how in the heck do you know what you're going to eat tomorrow, the day before? I barely know what I'm going to have for dinner that night. More or less, other than my breakfast is pretty solid, but as far as lunch is okay, you know, and I'm like a big 2-meal-a-day person. I have a good-sized breakfast, you know, and I eat very late in the afternoon. My husband and I are very late eaters, and I mean late as far as, you know, 3 o'clock, you know, and I'm up, say, you know, my breakfast is somewhere between 8 and 9. But I'm usually pretty busy or we're bowling, and by the time we get home, it's usually around 3 or 3:30, 4 in the afternoon. So then we'll have dinner, you know, our late dinner. And I just, as far as figuring out what I'm going to have the following day, my food is always throwing me off. So give me some little insight or whatever, okay? If you have anything to...
Yes. Okay. So you asked me a couple of questions in that, but okay. So what happened was, as I told you, when I lost my, I measured some things in the beginning. My sponsor didn't make me measure much of anything in the beginning, just eat. And she's like, just make a plate, eat 3 meals. And that was cool until it wasn't cool anymore. When you start losing weight, then you stop. If you're eating too much, you stop losing weight. So you have to adjust your food plan a little bit. And whether it's every couple months, you adjust the food plan. So you're eating just a little bit less than you need. Okay. And that's how you steadily, slowly lose weight, you get to a healthy body weight. But when I got down, and I was measuring a lot of things, I measure protein, I measure starches, and I wasn't weighing fruit at that time. But what happened was when I got too low, I had this sponsor, and she didn't know what to do either. So when you want to lose your weight, number one, you have to know what you're eating to begin with. You can't change something that you don't know what it is. In other words, there's no winging it anymore. We're done with the winging it. That's what got me where I was, is winging it. So I had to figure out, I started writing down my food. And then I had to go to calories because nothing else was working. I went to calories and I started doing calories. Then I started adding calories to bring my weight back up. And you can do that. Of course, that's good either way. But that's the way that worked for me to track my food intake, basically. I have many foods that I can eat that are good. They're all green. You know, red light and green light foods, you know what that means? Like red light are the ones that you can't eat because they're not abstinent. And then green light is what I make my food. That's the sober food plan, is all green light foods. In the beginning, people have yellow, but the yellows either become red or green, and mostly red. But so I eat all green stuff. That's what I'm saying. All foods that work for me, that's important. So, but there's a lot of them. Like I have a lot of things I can choose from. But I have to do this, I have to shop. I have to have my groceries. Okay, this is all important. I'm not going to drive through restaurant to pick up stuff on the way home. I make bad decisions at that time. That's how I got where I was, by just not knowing what I was going to eat next. So I have to have groceries, and then I have to do some cooking. I do it on the weekend. I do some extra cooking. I make 4 salads ready for the first 4 days of the week. And now I weigh and measure same things, basically protein, starches. I weigh fruit and I have a fat at each meal. Weigh that, of course, measure that. Those are the potent ones, calories. But I do that, and it's so second nature to me now that doing anything else really doesn't work for me. I really have tremendous peace in knowing what I'm going to eat the next meal or the next day. I have tremendous peace. The stuff's ready. It's in the fridge. Not saying I can't be spontaneous. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm rarely spontaneous like that. It doesn't work for me. There's no peace in that for me. So I kind of plan things, and it works really, really well. The most important thing is with abstinence is I want to put the food into my sponsor's ear. It's really on her email, by the way. Do you know she doesn't look at it? But she told me that once. But I pretend she does. I operate like my sponsor's reading my food. I send her the food every night. Sometimes I put funny things in there and I have names for things. And then if I change something during the day, I text her and let her know before I eat. That is tremendous freedom and peace for me. That took the food out of the picture. Now I can live my life. That's how important it is for me. Does that answer your question? That again was a very long answer to a question. Good to go? Okay.
I have a question, Holly.
Yes.
I was busily writing down your AM and PM tradition that you do every day. At night, you read page, you go through page 86 and you write a gratitude list. And then there was something you write, what did I do today or something like that? I don't know. And then the next one was I humble today? So mm-hmm. I don't know, what did you do today? I mean, is that?
Oh, well, one of the, see, I've added to this 10 step, the 10 step in the big book is asking, was I resentful? Was I selfish? Was I afraid? That's the beginning of it. But I added things that are in our tools, right? Which is, did I go to meeting? Did I do literature? Then, so I put our tools there and I put my action plan. You know, my action plan has, every day it has made the bed, floss. That's a whole nother story. Made the bed, floss, and lotion on my fingers, okay, on my cuticles, because I was so anxious I picked my cuticles for 20 years, okay?
Me
just
too.
Telling you guys, that I've was me, that. Right?
That must be a Southern or a California thing.
those three things head up, so I make sure I do those, and whatever else, sometimes it's like I put all the dishes away. Like, this is important. I have to have my, like, I lived like a hoarder before, kind of. That's gone. See, that's another gift of abstinence. My house, you could walk in my house. Now, it's not perfect. Believe me, it's not perfect. Those two dogs are on the other side of that door, and that fur wants to fly. Every Sunday now, because of the COVID, I don't have anybody clean my house, so every Sunday I clean my house. That's part of my action plan now. But it's even like I say, did I do the laundry? Did I get gas? These are things I don't really want to be doing, but I put them on my action plan. And the other question was, at the bottom, it's not supposed to be all your bad stuff, okay? So I put, what did I do well today?
That's what it is.
That's, yeah. What did I do well today? And there's always something. If I think back, and that makes me feel good, tell my sponsor what I did well. I don't know, you know, whatever. But, I mean, she loves me, but I tell her still, what did I do well today? It just feels good.
Well, so. I think that especially for me, that would be great, because you see, I try to do everything perfectly, and I put myself down forever. As I shared before, my sponsor brought up the fact that I have a sword. It points out and it points in. And so I hurt myself by, you know, not looking at what I did good today, but maybe what I did, I didn't negotiate correctly, or I didn't do this correctly, you know. And that's probably something I really need to look at. So thank you, because, you know, I put myself down. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Karen. Deb, you're up.
Thank you, Becky. Holly, would you mind saying what meetings that you enjoy going to? I had gotten a list of the LA meetings, but I guess your meetings are maybe the San Fernando Valley meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could just tell me like the days and the times, I could look them up on the intergroup.
Sure. Okay, so my favorites are Saturday morning Burbank, 7:30 a.m. Monday Night Miracles is 7:45 on Monday night. And then my other one I've been going to, there's a big book study out of the LA Inner Group, and it's Sunday morning at 9.
Thank you.
Those are very, very strong meetings. There's many, Benny, but those are strong meetings.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Or shares? Either one?
I would like to say something about I guess this kind of like crosstalk, but Karen was talking about, or we've been talking about always trying to, thinking about what we did wrong or what we could have done better. I've been catching myself lately, say it's the end of the day and I'll say to myself, well, you know, I got this done. I got that done. I, you know, went to a meeting. I did some service. I did this, that, the other, but I didn't get these other things done. And then I catch myself and say, that's okay. You know, I don't have to get every single thing on my to-do list done because I'm the one that creates that to-do list. And it's usually more things than I need to be trying to do in one day. So it kind of makes me chuckle a little bit. I kind of give myself a little pat on the back instead of saying, oh, why didn't you get more done? Just appreciate that what I did get done. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie.
Joy, you want to ask a question or share?
Yes, I would like to. I can't use the hand, the usual hand, because I'm one of the co-hosts. Mm-hmm. Couldn't figure out a way to do it. You know, I liked abstinence until I started losing weight because I discovered that it was a numbers thing and that the less I weighed, the less I could eat. The calorie intake had to be lower. So I remember when I initially started with my sponsor, she asked me what I was eating, and I explained, you know, what I ate for breakfast. And then I said, and then mid-morning I have, you know, something else. And then noon, she goes, wait, what did you just say? I said, oh, yeah, well, I have a snack in between. You know, I couldn't wait until lunchtime to eat again. And she said, well, no. And she kindly corrected me. So I'm not sure how it happened. It's the magic of this program. But when she explained things to me, and once I accepted and embraced that I had help here, it was a spiritual program, the rest came so simply. I don't have any food, well, I should say this, today and all the rest of the days for 10 years, I haven't had any cravings. And I don't get that. I don't understand it. I marvel at that because before I could be absent when I was sleeping or when I became an OA, when I started going to OA, I was absent when I was sitting in the chairs. I mean, I just didn't understand not eating. So to just eat three meals a day, yes, I've given up those snacks in between, but just eat three meals a day, it's perfect. I'm surprised. I'm really surprised. So did you have the same sensation when you were abstinent and you were losing the weight? Did you find it to be, on the one part, easy, but then more difficult the more weight you lost? Was that a problem? And also, were you afraid of success? Because I found that the closer I got to my goal weight, I was really nervous about looking my best. Did that happen to you?
Oh, okay. Well, the first question that you had was, what was it? No, I forgot. Well, so I'll do the site. It'll come back to me because that was, I know the answer that I want to tell you. Oh, it was about when you have to lower your calories or lower your food intake because you stall out on losing weight. Like that happens. That really happens. So it's just kind of science. Like when I tell my sponsees, okay, you have to lower your food a little bit, make it a little smaller, and you have to move more. Like there's two things you can move more. That works too. In fact, that's also good for the head, you know, to move your body, take a walk, just go take a walk. You know, that's good. It didn't bother me too much. I think every time I had to let something go, it's a little hard to go less. And then a couple of days later, it's okay again. It doesn't take long to adjust at all, really. And then your second part of the question, I didn't have fear about losing weight. I was astounded that I did, let's say that. But I was going okay. By the time, it took me about 2.5 years to lose that weight. So I was down to a healthy body weight. And I just had a couple of fears about the body itself does funny things when you take off 140 pounds, okay? It makes different noises. You can laugh. It's hysterically funny until you're right in the middle of it. You're like, whoa, what the heck? And I would scare myself walking by the mirror because my face went from weighed like my face. Oh my gosh, it was the most alarming thing for about a month. And then I adjusted. People you need other people in the program to tell you that. If I didn't open my mouth and say, tell people that, that would be, it was hard. It was different, it was hard. I had to take people with me when I went shopping for clothes. I'm not a fashion plate, okay? I wear a lot of plaid. So I didn't know what size, I didn't know what things were, how they're supposed to fit. There's so much to this. It's really, we need help. So always reach out to other people. And if you're uncomfortable, like I say, I was uncomfortable, I'd say that. And that really helped me a lot.
We've got about, 3 minutes. Does anyone have a burning desire? Did you get any burning desires, Becky? On the chat? Okay. I just want to thank you. Thanks so much, Holly. This has been just fantastic. Both you and Adina were great and so inspirational. I want to thank everyone else that was here and joined us. And we will see you tomorrow morning at 9:00. And to end tonight's retreat, I'd like all of you to join me in the Serenity Prayer. God. Grant me the serenity. To accept things I cannot change, courage to change the things I am, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a good night's sleep and see you in the morning.
Woo-hoo! Woo! Bye, everyone.